Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. Tell me something. Can you believe that the show we are airing today is the very last show of 2022? I almost said 2023. I jumped a year ahead. But that this is, that the year is gone. Can you believe that?
Every time this year I say that, another year's gone by, and then you say the next year, and it sounds so futuristic, 2023.
But, you know, one thing I have to say, the older you get, the quicker the years go.
Well, that's for sure.
You know, when I was young, we talked about when you're young at, you know, getting a driver's license was everything.
From 15 everything. To 16 was a generation.
Thinking 14 to 16, you know, but 15 to 16, it took forever. It took forever. So today, I've got my good friend, Terry Hershey, and...
Somebody you have known forever.
I have known Terry for most of my life. That is true. And we're just going to do a very sort of casual, I don't know if casual will be the right word, but we're going to have an informal chat about 2023, and we're going to do what every other podcast in the country is doing, and we're going to do like a year-end review. I love it when Tim Ferriss calls it the year-end review, and thinking, is he getting tested for steroids or something to get his year-end review? Did you get that, Terry?
I did.
Oh, good, good. Somebody got it. I don't know if any of the audience got it, but at least...
We dropped it.
I'm like Dave Chappelle on Saturday Night Live, what he told him, you know, a sort of politically incorrect statement, and one person in the audience laughed, and he said, "Thank you, I appreciate the one person
exactly.
that laughed."
I'm going to take you on the road with me.
Yeah, he is. I'm a big fan of Dave Chappelle. You know, he's kind of. I view him as, for those of you who know Lenny Bruce, I view him as the contemporary Lenny Bruce. Mm-hmm. That, you know, a freedom speaker. You know, a freedom of speech. And pushing freedom of speech. So today we're going to talk about 2022. And as I'm looking at my notes, all of my notes say 2023. So I don't know what I was thinking. So anyway, for just quick bit of intro, for those of you who do not know Terry, and most of you do, he's a regular guest, a dear, dear friend for 40 years, maybe. Yeah, 40 years.
Yeah. Love that.
That is, we're up on 40 years. And if you don't know Terry, he's a prolific writer. He's got 30 something books, conference keynote speaker, landscape architect, brilliant landscape architect, spiritual advisor, and really just such a close and dear friend. With that, let's welcome Hirsch on the show. Hey man, what's up?
And a halfway decent golfer.
Terry, you are not a halfway decent golfer. You're like a real golfer.
Yeah, but
what is your handicap? Yeah. 1 or 2 or 0?
Handicap is really good scotch.
Is there a scotch called handicap?
No, I'm just saying. I always fall for it. My handicap is in single digits, low single digits. Yeah, it's pretty good. The thing about it is, which is golf, this is a fascinating thing, because the better you get at something, I mean, you know this, even from the stuff you've done, and we were speaking, writing, whatever. So the better you get at something, if you're really good at it and you pay attention, more you're aware of how much you still have to learn.
So, carry on with that, because I so agree with you, but I want to hear your take on that.
Because you're paying attention to stuff that you didn't pay attention to before. It's the little thing. It's the nuanced stuff, which also means that little things become great victories. In other words, it's the little tiny things that you pay attention to, and that's what happens with people who are not necessarily wired or good at stuff. They'll give themselves the permission for those little victories. Little victories happen when you've given yourself the permission to see something that you're allowed to change, you know.
Tell me, you know, that's a good question for our show. What are some of the little things that you noticed in 2022 that were just that were striking to you, that did your, as in your language, that did your heart good?
Well, I'll finish the golf metaphor, and then I'll take it into that. Sometimes I'll do one-on-one with golfers who are not golfers, right? And so they're going to shoot it. The metaphor change, paradigm shift is they assume it's all predicated on the score they shoot. So they're never going to shoot a good score, therefore golf sucks. And they go around the whole day thinking, oh, this sucks. Because it's all about what score they kept. And so when I go around with them, I play the 9 holes or 18 holes. And for me, the entire purpose of the day is that you stand over a shot, you choose what shot you want to hit, and if you hit that shot, it doesn't really matter whether it's the right yardage, but if you hit the shot you say you want to hit, that counts as a win. Even a really crappy golfer will have at least 3 to 5 of those over 18 holes. That's huge. Never giving themselves permission to embrace any of that small stuff. So the first thing I do is I change that paradigm. So back to 2022, no, we always have these big measurements about score, and then who's winning the score, and it's the little tiny things that we miss all along the way. And I love little tiny Good Samaritan stories. Just love them. But they pop up where I didn't expect, because, you know, sometimes if you just look at the big score picture of the world and the big score picture of either the divisiveness or the darkness or whatever, thinking, we suck at this. This is terrible. And so I do, my first is a paradigm shift about how we keep score.
Gosh, do you remember the parable we used to tell in the 80s or 90s about the devil coming to a newly created universe? And everybody's getting along, and it's all fine. And the devil said, there's so much more to life that you don't know about. And keeping score is what's going to tell you if you have a good life or not. And so that was 40 years ago, 35 years ago, Terry, we were talking about keeping score. And I have kind of let that pass, and you have not let that pass. You've hung on to that ideology very strongly, and I think it's a very powerful. We live in an American world where keeping score is everything.
Yeah, and the way we measure the score is, you know, I had an event the other day, and I don't do as many as I used to do on purpose. I mean, I intentionally do fewer, but there was a lot less people than we had hoped were going to be at this event, right? So one way of keeping score is thinking, We blew it here, and this is not going to be a good thing, et cetera. But as soon as I keep score that way, I'm not present for the few people who are there. In other words, I'm not here anymore. And so...
Yeah, that's true, because somehow, you know, doesn't it make a statement, or does it to you, does it make a statement on your personal value, how you view yourself and how you think you're viewed by others, or is that not an issue for you?
Oh, well, of course it is, because then you're measured up against, you know, this goes way back. Remember when I first started writing, and I loved reading and I loved to write, and then, you know, you take anybody, you know, John Irving or whatever, and you're thinking, no, I'll never be a writer.
Oh, after reading Prince of Tides with Pat Conroy,
I'll never be a writer, yep.
And I just said, I can't write. I might as well just stop now. I have no business putting words on a piece of paper compared to Pat Conroy.
And it's the same with, you know, if I watch Tiger Woods play golf, and I'm thinking, I might as well quit. I'm not a golfer. I'll never be a golfer. And what's fascinating about all of that is the way we've retrofitted that as Americans to do that. In other words, it diminishes us. And yet, those people who are religious and go to the church, and the church tells us we get to be Christ-like.
What does that mean?
That's my point. Part of me, you can say, well, I'm not even going to try. That's not even worth it. I think the reality is that Christ-like part is he did a paradigm shift with everything he did. Wasn't about being big and grand. Wasn't even about his individual success. It was about little steps along the way where he was present. When you're present, you make a difference with kindness. When you make a difference with kindness, connected.
Kindness, acceptance of, not just overarching acceptance, but acceptance of the people that are not accepted culturally.
At the end of my Sabbath moment, I mean, state my values. My values are that the world only makes sense if I have a soft heart. And so I want to create places for sanctuary, empathy, inclusion, to the point you just made, passion and kindness. If I can do that, those are my values.
Did you see any of that anywhere in 2022 of softness, kindness, soft-heartedness, kindness, valuing of other people? Did you notice that apart from your life particularly, just maybe in our country, in our divisive, vitriolic, in terrible shape country, did you see any evidence of that sort of behavior that I'll just keep using your word because you use it a lot, and I like it a lot, and you use it in Sabbath moment, but that did your heart good?
On the grander scale, not necessarily. I mean, that's the thing about the way the score is kept at that level is it's about reputation, you know. And so we're missing the... It's fascinating because I've had conversations through 2022. We already know that around two or three issues in the country, there's literally people not even using... Facts don't mean the same thing. Completely different set of facts.
Yeah.
The world is different.
Yeah.
The world is different. In other words, one group says that that's not an accurate fact. And I mean, whether this is about the whole healthcare COVID thing or whether it's about the political thing in elections, but all of a sudden you've got that. So what's fascinating to me is whenever I've had a conversation one-on-one in just a small way, or even a meal or a beer or a coffee, someone who is of completely different set of facts than me in the world, every one of those encounters has been real.
Has been what?
Been real. In other words, there wasn't a need to be converted, and nor did I want to try to convert them, because I realized we could still connect as humans at another level. We still could.
You see, I think you just use a very important verb, and that is connect. And I think that is what is missing. I think I noticed that in 2022 is the inability of people, whether it be politics, personal life, your investment strategies, or you're just getting along with neighbor. Connection is not a big word. It's more about winning, getting my way, satisfying my needs. It's what, you know, what the mystics call the small ego, that is taking care of self and is not concerned about the community of the world at large.
That's the glaring paradigm of the culture that we are in, is that we assume values are based upon individualism. Individualism creates all the stuff you just mentioned. If we don't start with the fact that we are on this journey together and we are walking each other home, but you have to start there, because from individualism, it's still not easy to do empathy or inclusion or compassion or kindness. It's still hard to do. Individualism is still the number one goal.
Is there a place, because you know how strongly I am into individualism, but at the same time, community and corporate values are very important to me, and how I contribute to society, and you know, with my work in Africa and in a number of places here in the United States, I'm very concerned about that. But I am an individualist. Do you think that gets in the way of connectivity for me? I don't feel it does, but what about those of us that are just dyed-in-the-wool individuals? And you know that.
What does that mean to you, though? What does it mean to you to be an individual?
I mean, I know.
Good question. That's a very, very astute question. Then individualism means to be comfortable. I'm going to keep using your terms here. To be comfortable in my own skin. To be consistent with the values that I have learned culturally, you know, through growing up after 70 years, and the values that I hold, you know, the old, you know, I like the old Ben Franklin, you know, the old original American days of values of honesty and integrity. And whether they live those out or not, I don't know, but I know at least they wrote about them, and they were very important. But those come from an individual desire to give of myself to others. But I'm not being told. See, to me, the opposite of individualism is, I don't want to say socialism, but it is some sort of dictated by the state or dictated by the organization or dictated by the church, that these are the values we're going to live by, and this is what we're all about. And it negates any individualism, that what you think as an individual, how you come to what you believe, is much less important than how you agree with what we believe. Did that help the definition at all?
But that whole argument is strictly about how you do politics. And politics is not a negative word. Politics means way you get stuff done.
Right.
But that
right.
whole argument is about the way you get stuff done. It has nothing to do with well-being. I mean, for me, what you're just saying, the carryover for that is individualism. For you means ownership. I have to own who I am and take accountability for that. That's you. But if you do that, we know that I am somebody because I was birthed by somebody, was befriended by somebody, and there was a community that rescued me and made me who I am. And that's the point, is that every single one of us are on this planet together. We have to make that work. My whole reaffirmation about that is that if we don't, and you know, we'll go to sports, and we'll go to sports because we know if we don't win, and if one person takes all the energy away from the team, not going to win. And what I loved is about the writing during the World Cup, because several of the World Cups, including the final, ended on penalty kicks. Penalty kicks, you think, that's complete individualism. One guy kicking against one goalie. It's individualism. And the studies are that the team of that person kicking has a significant effect on whether he's going to be able to perform and do his kick, his job. And they had a whole bunch of things. Do we listen to each other? Are we connected with each other? Do we make space for the success? We wrap our arms around them when they fail. It was profound.
You know, you're familiar with John O'Donohue, the recent, I don't know how recent, but not too, when did he pass? In 2005, something like that? The great priest from Ireland.
Yeah, exactly.
And
in fact, I'm going to use one of his poems tomorrow on Sabbath moment.
Oh, his poems are brilliant. I love reading him. He made a statement in his book, Benedictus, I think it's called, and it's a book of poetry with a little bit of prose narrative, but mostly it's a set of poems. And he made this statement that what we are lacking in the world is meaning and belonging. We are in a desperate need of meaning and belonging. And if I look back at, you know, trying to keep on our topic a little bit at least, of 2022, there was meaning and belonging, but it is so divisive, Terry, between our parties that refuse to talk to each other and refuse to try to find common ground. And yet meaning and value are you know, in my mind, are two of the most essential attributes for what it means to be human.
Yeah, well, because the belonging is of that is not predicated on humanity. It's predicated on ideology. So it might, doesn't even have to be politics for that. I see anybody with Ohio State colors, I already hate them. I'm a Michigan boy.
Of course, of course. Yeah.
That kind of divisiveness is already predicated on that one team is right and one team is wrong. So the humanity part, we skip way over that.
Do you think, as Paul and I did on a show we were going to do on the podcast, and we're going to hold it off to publish it later, we talked about American values and what is important as a country in the 1950s and 1960s. And I made a statement that I think I was raised in the golden age of the United States, which was post-World War II. In my opinion, this is my opinion. You know, I've got no data, nobody to go to, but the 50s and the 60s were beautiful. We didn't lock our doors. You know, we would go to people's houses for dinner, Terry. Check this out. We would go for dinner uninvited. We just show up at dinner time. They say, hey, what are you doing here? Come on in. We got enough food for all of us. Welcome in. Try to come to my house at dinner time. You know, I'm going to feed you, but I'm going to order out a Chipotle. You know, you're not going to get meals, you're not going to get home prayer for meals.
I actually know that for a fact.
Yeah, of course. Chipotle and an IPA.
That's right. You got it.
Yeah.
So you think those values were better then than now?
I think so. I think people cared. You know, my at least I can only go by the people group that I hung around with that was, you know, truly very, very middle class, maybe a little lower middle class, but not quite, you know, just the strict, you know, American middle class of the 50s and early 60s. And people cared about each other. You know, their relationships were deep and strong, and they had fun. They were there. Anybody had a need, they were there for that need. There was just such a different... I think there was... People were individual, but they're not as individual as I am today. There was much more a corporate sense of identity that made for a very, very delightful group. And my parents had a delightful group of friends that, you know, as I was adopted and very young, you know, 8 to 12. And they all accepted me as just an adult. And I don't find that kind of thing today. Children are not appreciated except by their own parents, unless they're a superstar of some kind.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, it's interesting because I was you know born in the 50s too, and there's that, and I don't see it as the golden era, but I can't disagree with you about how far away I mean, look at the reality is if you take son who's only 25, but if you take his generation or even the ones 10 years younger than him, the 15 year olds. Take the amount of information that we had to process in the 1950s. We received, and the only media we would receive would be radio and or 45, you know, record and or some TV. But that was it. Or we read a paper. Now, and I don't have the numbers. I wish I did. The people have done research on this. It's the staggering amount of input and messaging that we have now versus then.
Oh, we
are already, because I'm going back to your sentence, at home in our own skin. We are not as at home in our own skin. We're just not. We can't be. So the distraction is profound, and I've been reading several books now about just the real impact of social media. We are more separated and more lonely than we've ever been. It's undeniable. And so...
And we're only promoting it. It's only getting more prevalent.
We are literally promoting it, literally. I forget the author. Oh man, it'll come to me maybe. But he said, said, our country would be better if we put front porches back on our houses.
If there was anything to look at.
Oh, front porches. In other words,
I know front porches, but if there was anything going on in the neighborhood, you know, used to we had front porches and we could watch the kids play in the neighborhood and we could chat with our neighbors across the street.
As you're walking by, you'd stop by and you'd sit on the front porch.
Yeah.
It's that exact point.
But we're not walking by. We're, you know, we pull into our garages, which have a private entrance to our home, so... Honestly, Terry, I have lived in this place for 11 years, almost 12 years. I do not know the neighbors of the people who have been my neighbors since I've been there. I do not know their names on the left. I know a guy's name, the husband's name on the right, and one guy across the street. And it is a, hi, Chris, hi, Tom, how are you? And that's the depth of our conversation. There is no community in our residential community. Is there one in yours in the PNW?
Yeah, well, you know, on Vashon, it was significant because we were part of a group that gathered neighbors, took care of each other. And then we were part of groups that gathered with other people at least once a month, just to make sure that we had meals together or stuff like that.
But they didn't. But they didn't buy into the 2020, you know, post 2020 ideal of just strictly event individualism. They were community sorts. They were sort of. They began as outliers, didn't they? Even in our society,
that would be very accurate. Correct.
Yeah, and very caring, and you know they, people laugh at them, call them hippies or whatever. But you know, they actually live the love and caring organ, the caring ideals of that generation that we need. So, you know, I know you have certain character values and traits that I know they're very private for you, so I'm not going to ask you to reveal anything that's very private for you, but what did you find of the things you consider most important in life? What did you find occurring last year, the last couple of years even, that has been, that you find these beliefs, these values have been compromised? What do you see as the dangers that, you know, we're going to look forward to 2023 and what a great year we're going to have, and we're going to have a big repeat of 2022 with some changes. Is there anything that was compromised for you that you are sad about that you wish that did not occur?
I miss my garden.
Oh, I cannot imagine how you miss your garden. That's it?
Well, I mean, because it's such a grounding thing. Of course, now I have a bigger garden in the sense that there's 100 acres around me where a golf course is on it, and it's all woodland. I mean, so it's beautiful.
Yeah, but you can't get out and tinker and get your dirt in your fingernails.
Not like I used to, no.
No, not like you used to.
That's accurate. But it's also, it's that thing is just about, so, you know, to begin with what was disconcerting or whatever your question was, it starts with, are you grounded? It's the first question I ask people anyway, is what grounds you? Go back to the at home in the own skin thing. I mean, if you have values, fine, but you can't really practice them if you're not at home in your own skin. Or do you run away from your own self and your own values? And so I do miss that.
And that's all a part of keeping score, isn't it? That you can't be home in your own skin because the score pad is from another game that you are lightly involved in, but it does not make up the nature of who you are in your core.
Yeah, I mean, in other words, if you're not at home in your own skin, then you're not making choices out of a sense of ownership. In other words, you're making it because you need to impress or prove or earn or get even or get back or whatever, you know. It's always another reason you're making those choices.
You know what really helps me? I didn't do it in 2022, but I did it for every year for a number of years before that. But I, you know how anal I am about values and directions and am I living my life the best way?
Used to do year-end things every year.
Oh, we still continue to do that. We're doing that next week. Okay. Where okay, my wife and I, let's just take a brief moment and explain it. My wife and I go off for 3 days or 3 nights and 2 days minimum. I think it's going to be 3 nights, 4 or 3 days, 4 nights this week. And we play together and do fun together. We're near a shopping mall and we do all that. But we take time to talk about our marriage. And we take about, what did I do last year that really worked? What didn't work? And the bottom line question is, what do I need? What kind of husband do I need to be next year to make you feel a satisfied married woman? And we do that every year. And it is really powerful just discussing it. You know, just bring, even if we're in total agreement, you know, we don't, you know, just do what you did last year. That was great. Well, let's articulate what that was, you know, what were really critical. And so what I have done, you know, a book I wrote in the mid-90s titled Getting the Right Things Right, Reinventing the Life You Want. I sort of organized my life around the principles of four P's: passion, purpose, people, and praise. And I say, what do I need to do to keep passionate? What do I need to do that I feel like I contributed to the culture as far as purpose? People, how do I develop relationships? And praise is, it had to be a 4P. But praise is about my individual relationship with God. But you know what else I have on that, Terry? I have my personal values. What are my top 10 commandments of personal values? And I have my wife's 7 things that she would like me to go through, or that she would like me to do to make her a happy wife. And I will go through those. I'm not anal. I don't do it daily, weekly. I do it monthly or bi-monthly and go through and just give myself a plus, check, minus. And how am I doing at that? And what could I do to improve to make my life better? So I've somewhat, you know, I know it sounds a bit anal, but I'm not really stuck on it. Like I have to do these things. These are suggestions, you know, because I realize what I wrote in January, I could change my mind in May. And I don't worry about it, but it does keep me on track where I'm not just always out there with my feet firmly planted in midair.
And I've always respected that about you, and that's essential for you, because that's the way your personality is wired to do that. I've always, you know, appreciated the way you actually honor the system, do that, which is good, because the system is necessary, because what the system is, you know, this takes us back to our liturgical practices, you know, it's a habit. It's the same with whether you do gardening or golf or whatever it is, you have a habit. And if you have good habits, and that's what you're talking about, is good habits. I mean, some of those same things I do, but I don't do them with a list, because...
No, you're not good with lists.
I can't imagine where my list would be. And then, then life would suck so badly, because I would say, I'd say to Nancy, sure, there were 7 things I was supposed to do, but I don't know where the list is.
So, okay. And, you know, you're not alone. I think you're probably more average, if I may be normal, more what most people do rather than what I do. How do you keep track of, how do you keep a handle on, I'm consistent with my inner gyroscope, or I'm not acting consistently with that, with those deeply seated values? If you don't have this anal retentive list. How do you know? Is it a gut feeling? Is it something, an activity that you did? You said, oh, man, I screwed that up. I probably should have done that differently. Or I was incredible with that. That was perfect. And I feel, you know, very, very contented with myself. How do you do that without some sort of anal list?
In a sense, there's sort of a list. Because number one is, first one is, was I present? In other words, was I actually there? If I wasn't, then a lot of things are going to go really crazy and haywire. And then I have to ask the question, why wasn't I there? What distracted me? You know, what's going on maybe bigger and deeper in my life? Because the thing about, now I'm going to do a biblical thing here. Jesus never multitasked.
Nope.
Ever once. So that's my first thing, is being present. In other words, whoever he was with, he was, boom, there. That's my first one, was I present. And so there are times when I'm not, and there are lots of reasons that'll do it. There's no craziness in the world. I'm distracted with other stuff. I'm unhappy. No, so stuff can make me not be there. But at least I know what to do. I need to know why I'm looking at that now. I don't give myself crap for having that negative stuff go on, but I see what it's taken me away from. Being present, number one. Two is the corollary of that, and that's just listening, seeing, acknowledging. In other words, we're back to the connecting thing. And so that's not, I mean, that could be with me sitting with another person, but, I mean, and you can relate to this, or it could be me during my own meditation time.
It sort of reminds me of something. I forgot what it reminded me of, because I made a mistake at looking apart from my computer. But tell me again. Remind me, what was this? You know, I've lost track.
Well, I have to. My first one is, was I there, or am I there?
Yes.
And
yes,
the second
yes,
is, yes. Did I give myself the permission to pay attention?
You know, a couple of things come to mind on that. One, and it has to do with your second statement. To me, presence means paying attention.
Exactly.
That is really, you know, presence. What is presence is sort of a esoteric word. Paying attention is very explanatory, or very, very descriptive. And like last night, my wife had a party for one of her business groups, and she had an in-home party, and there were about 15 women, and I was there for the first 5 or 10 minutes and met 3 women, and then went off to my separate cave somewhere out in the movie theaters. But you know, I had a conversation. I probably had a five-minute conversation with 2 women. Where I had no desire to talk about me. There was none. I was curious about these women. You know, they're very high level. They're executive VPs of large companies. And they were just utterly fascinated. And I could tell, you can feel it, when I walked away, they felt very affirmed because they were listened to. And they were appreciated, and there was questions. It wasn't just, you know, there would be questions upon questions about what they were saying, so I could take it a deeper and deeper level. If we could only do that, rather, you know, I think it was Covey that said we need to listen with the intent to understand, not the intent to respond. And if we listen with the intent to respond, it changes the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes with the list, with the intention to understand. It changes the world. People feel cared for, and they feel interesting and important, and we can do that. Unfortunately, and you know, going back to our year-end review, where do we see that? Do we see that in public discourse? Is that only in private discourse? In 2022, can you think of an example of that in public discourse where somebody actually cared what somebody else was saying and thought about it?
I do see it.
Oh, you do? Can you give me an example?
I listen to the PBS. If I listen to the news, I listen to PBS.
Uh-huh.
And they have a thing every Friday night with David Brooks and Jonathan Capehart.
Okay, and David Brooks is conservative, right?
He's if you're aligning them in terms of political policies, David would be conservative and Jonathan would be liberal or progressive.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the other person who would fill in for David sometimes is an op-ed writer for the Washington Post named Michael Gearson. And Michael died recently, I think a month or so ago. Anyway, I was an avid Michael, very conservative, and in terms of politics, meaning the way you do things, not the party you stand for. Politics simply means how you do stuff. You know? These people be on very opposite sides of stuff. And the conversations they had about each other, with each other, were nothing but doing your heart good, because they respected each other and respected what was at the core of the other person.
And although the opinions were different, they could respect the logic, where they're trying to go with it. They just didn't agree with the outcome. They thought,
there's a better outcome. There's a different way to do that, and we're going to, that'd be like if, you think we should bunt. No, I think we should go for the fences. It's two different politics. There's a way to... But what I liked about their conversations with each other is that it was not just because they said, look, we're doing this because it's a nice thing to do. It's that they saw at the core of the other person character and values. That's the language. And when I see that happen in conversations, I latch on to that.
I love that. I love that. I think discourse, especially in the public, it's a public and private arena, just is rare. It is so rare. I had a conversation with a man. I went to the to a pro football game on Sunday, and I met with one of my son's friends, and we talked, about very important political, philosophical, personal. I mean, we just. A conversation with me is never, what did you have for dinner? I could care less. And for most points, we agreed, but the points we disagreed, we could see the logic and the passion and the care in the other person. And it made it so much easier to just accept that, not necessarily agree with them, but we could have meaningful conversations where we're not trying to change each other's mind. We're just trying to offer each other another perspective. And if that ends up in changing your mind or changing or altering your viewpoint, wonderful. If it doesn't, oh well, that's it. So here's what I want to do. I want to wrap up our session. Here's what I'd like to do. Let's come up with... This is... I'm just thinking this off the top of my head. If we were to write, I know this is supposed to be next week, the 2023 goals, but if we were to write, what qualities of life do we think are important that would make our life meaningful and could actually contribute to a much more cohesive, meaningful community or corporate life? Let's start with paying attention. I think, and that's, paying attention is both other-centered and self-centered, because when we're paying attention, we're learning about ourselves. We're learning the depths about ourselves, the strengths of ourselves, the areas we might want to modify or adjust. But then they're also talking about sort of corporate values. So apart from paying attention, what do you think is important? What would you think is important for you to do to demonstrate a year that you are going to be A year of contentment. If I can even, that may be even too broad of a statement.
Wow. Well, paying attention is fine. I would say that, because the bigger theme there for me is that I want to live 2023 the soft heart. In other words, I don't want, it's just too easy for my heart to get hard.
Is it? I have never seen you with a hard heart, Terry.
Oh, well, yeah. It's because it's internal. That part you know about. You know. Internally, hard heart, we are our own worst enemies when that happens. In other words, then, because if it's hard, then you're going to be less trusting. You're going to be more cynical. You're gonna not want to pay attention as much. And
right. We start believing our own bullshit.
Yeah, and so I think even those two things, I'd be happy to talk around those around any company, corporation table.
Group. Yes, yes.
Both of those, exactly.
Go ahead, I want another.
Well, then you do the other one, which is the pay attention, two variations of that. One is the listening one you talked about. The other is my kind of religious wording of it. It's the sacrament of the present moment. In other words, that grace is alive and well now. I mean, it's here now, not around the corner. It's not when we make the next,
Oh, man, I could go into a whole discourse on this about, I think one of the issues around, I don't want to say religion, but around the way faith in all traditions seems to be much more about heaven and hell and the life hereafter. And Jesus is much less concerned about that. And he's concerned about the life right now. The kingdom of God is with you. The kingdom of God is present. This kingdom of love and grace and acceptance is present. And if we could change our, I had a friend who's always wanting me to help him become a Christian, and I can't, I can't do that. I can't change someone's mind. I can give him data, we can talk, we can chat, but I don't live under any illusion that I'm going to convert him. But, his question is, what it concerns me is heaven and hell. And I said, I hate to tell you this, but it's unimportant. It doesn't make a difference. What are you talking about? It doesn't make a difference. If I die, I don't want to go to hell. Well,
yeah.
Where are you getting this? Where?
Can I tell you what? When I was a kid, what they used to say to me, because I was raised in a very fundamentalist, and that was always the thing. They'd say, if you were to die tonight, do you know if you'd spend eternity in heaven? And that's always the question. If you were to die tonight. And I've been in a church my entire life. Never once did anyone say, if you were to live today, what would you do?
If you were to live, since it's a church environment, if you were to live the mind of Christ today.
If you were to live today, in other words, I always said, if you were to die today. In other words, nobody ever offered me the chance just to be here now.
I so agree. There's one other value that I think I would like to, maybe we could close with this one, because it's very important to me personally, and it has to do with my wife and I, and that is the withholding of judgment. Accepting the other person as they are and withholding judgment. And we are just so quick to judge, and when we judge, we remove ourselves from the general acceptance of someone else, the love of someone else, the care and appreciation and the trust. When we are just, even if I disagree with something, I am getting much, much better. Unless I'm talking to you and we're just talking bullshit politics or something like that. But even deep meaning things, I withhold judgment. It's none of my business. It's just one thing that I think of, and who do I think I am that I can tell another person what's better in their life to do? And the better I can do that in 2023, the better I can support people, offer suggestions. I never offer advice. I offer alternatives. here are some potentially other ways you can think about it. That's why I call myself not an executive coach, but a partner in thought. And that I will think through this with you, but I'm not going to tell you what to come up with. This has got to be yours.
No, what you need to do, Charles, is you need to say, I'm glad that Hershey's my friend, because I've decided I don't want to judge people in 23, but Hershey is really good at judging people, so I'm going to send you over to him, because he'll set you straight.
you know, you are very, very judgmental politically, but you are not judgmental individually.
I back up a step from that by saying I don't want to judge. The way I put it is, I don't want to attach a label. As soon as I label something, then yeah. I dismiss whoever the person is. See only the label. So I'm very, very conscientious about that. My temptation to go ahead and attach a label. Now, I can be very vociferous about where I stand and what my opinion is. As soon as I label somebody that's different in a certain way, label then denies them of existence.
That's delightful. Thank you. You know, I'm thinking, as I'm putting this podcast together, you know, one never knows what it listens to, what it sounds like after you listen to it, but in doing it, I really like this format. I feel like we covered very, very important things about what's important for life last year, this year, next year, who we are. I so appreciate your candor and your wisdom, Terry. You know, you besides being a good friend, you are a good thinker that can help me work through issues. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's the variation I would put on the thing about being present and listening is you create safe spaces, and you and I have done that for each other, which is what makes us friends. So that's...
Isn't that true? Creating safe spaces. Add that to our fourth one. Creating safe... Paying attention, withholding judgment. There was another one, and...
Listening is part of that, and then in creating safe spaces, yeah.
In creating safe spaces. Well, my friend, it's time to close out. Let me tell all our listeners to remind them to go to terryhershey.com and check out your Sabbath moment. I mean, it's as good a blog as is written. It's out there. Blog post, whatever you call it. It's truly worthy. So I want to encourage them to go there. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie, our last show for 2022. And we look forward to a very different podcast opening the year that's going to be, I think we're going to talk about being successful without a college degree. And this is with a 29-year-old woman. And it's just a whole different paradigm than what we're taught in our education. So that's going to be next. So until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.